From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. People socialize, research, shop, and entertain themselves online. They read online. So if the trend towards digital activity continues, are public libraries an endangered species? Yale University students recently launched a campaign to save the books after the school's librarian proposed relocating thousands of them to make room for more student seating. That's according to the Washington Post. The outcry by students shocked administrators, and they compromised by slightly increasing the number they would keep and asking for input on which ones to keep. It was 2014 that WECT produced a story about New Hanover County's purchase of land for a new library, and the story starts this way. At a time when readers are switching to e-books, New Hanover County leaders have decided to buy land for a new library to replace the current Myrtle Grove branch. While it's not spelled out, you might hear an really, guys? An expensive book receptacle when we're going paperless? That was 5 years ago. County Commissioner Rob Zappel, also a WHQR board member, told WECT that there would always be a need for a family gathering place. Is that still true? And what does that really mean? That new branch, the Pine Valley Library, is set to open May 6th. It's the culmination of years of planning and is designed to be, as County Manager Chris Coudray describes it, a 21st century library. Randall Library at the University of North Carolina Wilmington is also set to undergo a massive renovation. The General Assembly has approved $5.5 million for the project. Officials say they'll need almost $62 million to complete it, which they expect to do by the fall of 2022. Today, we'll explore the evolution of the institution we call a library with two experts. Harry Tuckmeyer joined the New Hanover County Public Library staff in 1981, and he's served as director since 2008. Harry Tuckmeyer, welcome to Coastline.
It's great being here, Rachel.
Great to have you here. Lucy Holman is the university librarian at Randall Library on the University of North Carolina Wilmington campus. Lucy Holman, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rachel. It's great to be here.
Great to have you here. And we're inviting you to join the conversation during the live Wednesday discussion. When was the last time you set foot in a library? How do you use your local library? Are you a steady reader who never goes to the library? Tell us about your habits or lack thereof by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. The new Pine Valley Library branch, Harry Tuckmeyer, isn't just new and larger digs for more books. County Manager Chris Coudray described it as a community destination. How is this new location emblematic of the changing public library?
Well, I think it's a lot of people are using libraries in a totally different way. Libraries are a community center. They are a focal point. They're sort of an access, sort of an anchor to a community. We have large meeting rooms. I think the best example is to see what happens any story time. We have story times there on, in fact, it's like Wednesdays, Thursdays, and it may grow more because we can't accommodate all the people that come. And so you've got these parents and their children or caregivers and kids, and they make it a whole event for that day's activity. And so they'll come, they'll do some stuff maybe outside, and we're looking at how we can integrate the outside. Libraries are evolving to have maker spaces. Some libraries are doing community spaces where they sort of like, pop up offices where people can collaborate and have workspace. For children, it's just maker space. We're doing that at a couple of our locations. So the whole kind of concept of what can transpire in a library is changing. Used to be that most of us were just consumers of information. And the new trend tends to be not only consumers of information, but creators of information or creators of content, as they call it. And you need space to do that and flexible space to rearrange. And so I think we've done some of that. I mean, you're always constrained by space and budget, But we will have that at the New Pine Valley space, and there's an opportunity to explore how that can be done in a really exciting and positive way.
Lucy Holman of UNCW's Randall Library, from a conceptual standpoint, is Randall Library's planned renovation similar to the idea of the New Pine Valley branch? I mean, what is going to be so different about it?
I think there are many elements similar to what Harry's talked about. We, too, at university libraries are moving from repositories of material and information to that idea of a center for learning and knowledge creation. So like in the public library, we too have a makerspace. We have equipment and technology for students to do video editing, audio editing, publication design. And I think the other critical piece, in addition to providing the space for that kind of activity, is the expertise among our library faculty and staff to help students and help faculty, in our case, design educational experiences, create those multimedia productions. So it's not just providing the technology, but training students to be able to use that to create new content.
Tell us about the range of digital literacy that the two of you encounter, and what that means for librarians who deal with the public or any staffers in the library. Because Harry Tuckmeyer, you've talked about the fact that helping to impart digital literacy to your patrons
is a big charge.
Part of it.
You know, people on the surface are appear to be digitally literate, but they're really not. Take away the icon, take away the homepage that they go to out of comfort, and they'll go, my goodness, how do I find this app? They don't even understand that. And so because we're a public library and we see everybody, a lot of people default and come to our doors for that kind of assistance. So our staff are increasingly find the same thing that you're doing in a different realm of really getting people connected to technology in a different way and understanding when the screen goes blank or they lost that connection, how they could find it again, things as simple as that. So much of the information people need to get to for day-to-day living is electronic. And so they need, that's why the transformation, and it could be some form they have to fill out for the government, for their bank, for whatever, everything, for a job. You can't get a job at McDonald's without going online. You have to sit down, go to a computer, and put in your resume. And so for people who have that kind of difficulty, a place where they can get that assistance is critical.
Now, we're going to talk a little later in the discussion about figuring out which sources are legitimate primary sources for research, Lucy Holman, and how you help guide students through that process. But Harry Tuckmeyer, with the public library, we're talking about a pretty fundamental level of introducing people to technology and teaching them how to deal with it. Is this mostly a generational thing? Are we talking about, you know?
It would be nice to think that, but I don't believe it really is. I think even with younger people, the questions, the level of difficulty may be a little bit higher. The bar may have gone up a bit, but they'll still have the same challenges. Think about yourself and when you buy some new electronic device and, you know, it looks like it was really transliterated, not really translated, and you're trying to understand the instructions and you go like, well, what am I really supposed to do here to get access to that stuff? Yeah.
Go ahead. We liken it and we have digital natives as our primary population. But even with younger people, they may know how to drive the car, so to speak, but when the car breaks down, they're not quite sure how to fix it. So that's, I think,
right,
where we come in is they can do the basics, but when something goes wrong, how do they get back on track?
So let's talk about the kinds of needs that you meet, Harry Tuckmeyer, in terms of the people walking in the front doors of the new Hanover County Public Library? We know, for instance, in downtown Wilmington, there is a homeless population here that seeks shelter in the library. What other kinds of needs do you find yourself and your staffers needing to meet?
Well, you know, I think that's actually what makes working in a public library awesome and just wonderful, because it's the world at your fingertips. It's everything you can imagine walks through your door. We do get the homeless, but we get people who are the most generous and sweet individuals that you've ever met, elderly or looking for that one conversation they may have had as they're looking for that large print book to read and take home. Get a lot of, like I said, parents and kids. There's nothing more invigorating than seeing a couple of little 3-year-olds coming into story time and being excited about the opportunity to be read to. Students doing homework. The whole gamut, or just people who have to print an airline ticket, or they're working on a business plan. So the diversity of use, the reason I think people focus on stuff like perhaps the homeless is that they may be there for a longer period of time. But the traffic that we get in and out is just amazing. And so I think it's a misnomer to believe that those buildings are just for one segment of the population. I think if you took your time and looked at the people who enter every day, you'd see that vast array of the population. It's awesome.
You're listening to Coastline. It's a look at the concept of 21st century libraries. What are they becoming, and why are they more relevant than ever? Lucy Holman of UNCW's Randall Library and Harry Tuckmeyer of the New Hanover County Public Library are with us today, and they're answering your questions during the live Wednesday discussion. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from this break, we'll hear from a listener. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. The need for a public library for research, reading, entertainment is growing. That's despite a steep increase in digital resources. My guests today are shepherding their respective institutions through changes to meet 21st century needs. Lucy Holman is librarian at UNCW's Randall Library, and Harry Tuckmeyer is director of the New Hanover County Public Library. They're taking your questions on this Wednesday. When was the last time you visited a library? What was the trip for? Have your library habits changed over the last several years? Tell us about it by calling us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Jamie writes, my first 3 years in Wilmington, I went to the library all the time. I live near the Myrtle Grove Library, but thought that downtown had a bigger selection. I always found our librarians to be helpful and often interesting people. But once I discovered the Libby app by Overdrive, she writes, I quit going. I also paid to join the Brooklyn Public Library, since their huge collection is more in keeping with the books I like to listen to. Still love the idea of gathering with people who are readers, so I'm wondering what our local libraries can do to attract more of us to the building. I would love to come for films, for example, and also for interesting speakers. Computer classes would be fantastic, especially for those of us who are relatively sophisticated users. And of course, the meeting rooms are useful too. Harry Tuckmeyer, there are libraries across the country are doing things like offering discounted passes to museums and parks, and they're holding Lego festivals to bring people in. What's on the docket for New Hanover County?
Well, we actually are creating a couple of two maker spaces that you've heard about. That's the opportunity to sort of create and explore stuff. At our North East Regional branch, we got a grant, and we're doing a mini maker space, and that's for really sort of school-age kids and toddlers almost. And it'll have stuff like robotics, a little coding, learning how to do that, and direct.
You're going to teach little kids coding.
Yeah. We'll have all those apps that they can play and learn that. At the Pine Valley branch, we've got a maker space that we're going to see how it evolves, because we think there may be a need for some more of adult directed stuff. So it may have, well, we'll have like a 3D printer and some laser kind of technology, but it may even also have a sewing machine, and we may do that because it's the diversity is the key, is what you never really know what people want to explore and learn and create, and just having that flexible space to do it is one. But you know, we do book talks, we do traditional lectures all the time. So there's the problem really is that New Hanover County is growing, and the opportunity to hear a lecture, go to an event, is there's so many venues now. The university has great programming all the time, and you know, then you've got Thalian Hall, you've got the Wilson Center, and there's all kinds of things going on. So that opportunity is a lot more vast. So we look at the things that are less available to people.
Lucy Holman of UNCW's Randall Library, you've also talked about getting a 3D printer
Yes.
into the library. And so I don't imagine that people will be making tiny human hearts there, but what kinds of things will people use those for?
Well, it's very interesting. We're using them for a lot of prototypes for the sciences. We're working with a number of faculty in digital arts, creating things with our 3D scanners and 3D printing. We also, part of our makerspace is the equipment to both experience virtual reality and create virtual reality experiences. So just recently, one of our library faculty was working with a class where they were designing a prototype for an underwater drone, so to speak. Uh-huh. I don't know if that's uh-huh. the correct terminology. And they're working with faculty to create these immersive experiences. So, for example, an experience moving through the body, looking at cells at a cellular level through virtual reality. So those are all kinds of projects that we're working on with faculty and students at UNCW.
The scope of what people are learning and researching and creating in these institutions, it sounds like you're going to have to change the name of the thing from library to Imaginarium or Creationorium or something. That's really amazing.
Well, that's actually the fun part about libraries, is that they are the most dynamic and ever-changing institution you can imagine. And people think in their mind that a library is a storehouse of old stuff and almost an archive. And it's everything but. And the modern librarian, and I think the people who work at UNCW, the people who work for the public library, they're amazing in terms of their ability to want to learn more stuff.
Absolutely.
And be able to reach people in totally different ways. It's what's made the job so exciting for as long as I've been working in it, is that every day it's really different. So if you don't like change, don't be a librarian,
exactly.
Really. I mean,
exactly.
Because it is.
And I think, too, the scholarship at the universities are changing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it used to be the coin of the realm was an article in a research journal or a book. Now we're doing all kinds of digital scholarship with curated interactive displays that have the scholarship at its core. But it's a totally different medium, and we're overlaying. We were just interviewing someone who had worked on an exhibition around Atlanta and had overlaid all of this mapping onto this historical document.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
You could
yeah.
have sort of this, again, immersive experience going through the city of Atlanta over time. So there are a lot of great examples of new scholarship.
part of the job, of course, is helping people find legitimate sources for research. And that can be tricky because this really requires a pretty high level of inquiry and digital literacy, Lucy Holman. So how do you approach teaching students what to look for online, and how do you train your staff?
Sure. Well, I think, again, many people feel, well, everything's online, so we have all that we need at our fingertips. And in fact, there's such a deluge of information that it's even more critical to help students and the general public sort of navigate that information system and to be more critical thinkers, more critical evaluators of learning. So particularly in this age of, quote, fake news, that becomes increasingly important. So we see about half of the student body, about 7,500 students each year in information literacy classes. Information literacy, which is sort of our term for finding and evaluating information, is scaffolded throughout the curriculum at UNCW. It's a basic learning outcome of all programs at the university at the undergraduate level. So we are embedded in every discipline to develop those experiences and teach those students those skills in terms of evaluating information.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about the role of libraries in modern culture and why, despite a surge in at-home online activity, libraries are actually growing. Answering your questions on this Wednesday, Lucy Holman. She's the university librarian for UNCW's Randall Library, and Harry Tuckmeyer. He's director of the New Hanover County Public Library. You can either call us during the live Wednesday discussion at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. And Jim writes, I go to see the downtown branch of the New Hanover County Library at least once a month for a book discussion. And he says, I visit Randall Library, UNCW, which is open to the general public at least once a month as well. Libraries are critical information, communication, and civil discourse. Thank you for that, Jim. You know I'm a fan. We are looking forward to a new state-of-the-art library downtown someday. And hopefully, here it comes, the Project Grace will make this happen someday in a sensible way. Harry Tuckmeyer, Project Grace. Should the Belk Beery building remain as it is, or does that whole thing need to be torn down?
Well, Rachel, I'm going to talk about what I'm good at. And or hopefully good at, is the content, what's inside the box, okay? Our job and my job and our staff's job is to make certain that you and everybody listening today gets the best library experience they can get anywhere we put it. And so our challenge is you give us the box, we'll make it happen to be the most dynamic and awesome space. There's no question that the ability to design something brand new gives you the opportunity to create spaces in a different way and to align services in a better way than you're using an existing box. But if that's the direction, you make it happen. So
so you're saying that it would be good to tear the whole thing down?
I'm not saying, no, I'm saying it's critical that we have a public library downtown, and that's regardless of the direction Project Grace goes, that's a commitment of New Hanover County. The decision as to what's best is really in the eye of the beholder. Our job and my job is to really make certain that you get the best bang for your buck, that you get what you want when you come to a library. And we know we can do that in a new space that they've proposed, or we can make it happen in the space that we have. So I don't worry about things I can't control. I worry about the job I have, which is to make certain you get what you want and do the best job we can doing it.
So the official position then of the library is as long as we can fulfill our mission, but you're not
right.
Advocating,
I think
we're
advocating for the appropriate space to fulfill our mission. You're absolutely right. And I think either project does that. You go through an extensive space study and you look at the assessments of it, and then you make a decision. The ultimate decision probably for any project is always a larger one, because it involves money and it involves budgets that are well beyond the dreams of Lucy and I of what we would want to create for a library. We also recognize that there are constraints within that, and that you give a little bit here and you get a little bit there. And that's the reality of the world today.
Lucy Holman of UNCW's Randall Library. Jim raises a point. He says that the Randall Library is open to the public. What are the usage rules there?
Yes. Well, we are open, fully open to the public. And during the semester, we're open what we call 24/5. So from Sunday at noon until 10 on Friday, we are open 24 hours. And then we're open 10 to 6 on Saturdays, and then opening at noon on Sunday. We have slightly reduced hours during the summer and intersessions, but we are completely open. We have guest computing there for the general public for, I think, a very reasonable $25. The public can become sort of a guest member and has circulating privileges with the collection as well. And we do have quite a number of community residents in the library. We also work closely with the university's Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. So we often do tours for the community through OLLI. So, and we encourage the public to come to a lot of programming in the library. The general public is not our primary audience. Obviously, students and faculty our primary audience, but we're certainly welcoming to all community residents.
Al writes, I'm doing genealogy research on my family. Does the new Hanover Library have any sites such as Ancestry Family Search available for use, either in the library or online?
Yes, we do. As a matter of fact, we have Ancestry, and the trick with Ancestry is because they do such a big push and a commercial venue, That source, you can use it for free in the library, but you can't use that one on our account from home, because that's where but you get full access to Ancestry and digital resources. A lot of the genealogy, because it is a booming business and there's a market for it in the public realm, we don't get the site license that allows for off-site use. But yes, if you want to do genealogy, definitely. I mean, we've been in that business for 100 years. We have best genealogy collection probably in the state of North Carolina. It's awesome. And when I first started there were a couple of local historians that were doing birth and death records, grave sites, digging up old, you know, community grave sites and creating indexes to them. So there's a wealth of information. New Hanover County, Wilmington being the biggest city in North Carolina up until World War I, and we're a lot of residents populated. You know, you come to New Hanover County first, and then you move out. So the genealogy search a lot of times starts here.
Lucy Holman, did you want to add anything to that about Randall Library's resources?
Well, not so much about genealogy specifically, but UNCW holds approximately more than 300 archival collections about local organizations, businesses, many of which we've digitized, so they're available through our website. So not so much personal history, but history around the development, social development, economic development, political development of the city, and really the region. We're trying to become a hub not only of materials from New Hanover County, but the surrounding seven counties in southeastern North Carolina. And we're partnering with a lot of smaller historical societies and organizations in the surrounding counties to become sort of a hub of historical documents in the region.
That's the local collection that you're talking about. You have talked about the idea of shrinking your physical collection of books throwing out the books
in
favor of digital resources. How are you approaching this? Because, of course, in the introduction, referenced the story about Yale University students getting all up in arms and starting a Save the Books campaign when their library decided to do that to make room for other things. So how are you thinking about
that? Sure. Well, we're actually exploring a number of things. We do not plan to throw away all the books. Some of the things that we do know that we're doing is particularly with journals, which do take a lot of physical space and are available online, we're transitioning from print access to digital access. So while the footprint's shrinking, the content is still accessible. So that's one area. We're also doing much of that with our government resources because those are often available online as well. We are digitizing a lot of the collections that I just mentioned, still preserving the print, but by digitizing it allows us to store them in a way that is much more compact. And then some of the things that we're looking at with our general collection is, again, storing them in a way through compact or high-density shelving that allows you to get a lot more materials in a much smaller space. So it's not so much withdrawing the materials, but just reducing the space. That said, I will say there are a lot of studies that show a continual and strategic deselection of materials, particularly outdated materials, actually increases circulation. So having a very current, targeted, relevant collection actually enhances the use of the collection rather than hurting the use of the collection. So we do imagine that we will probably withdraw some percentage of the collection as we move to a new space.
You're listening to Coastline. It's a look at the evolving library, how leaders are keeping these institutions not just relevant, but repositories of expertise way beyond the card catalog. You can ask your own question on this Wednesday either by calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from this break, we'll have one more segment for you to get your question or comment in. We're going to hear from Peggy, and we're also going to find out whether there's a difference between reading a book and reading online. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Libraries are changing to meet the needs of the 21st century. But as one of my guests today explains, that the components that make up the library, people, place, and platform, are as important as they ever were. Harry Tuckmeyer is director of New Hanover County's Public Library, and Lucy Holman is university librarian at UNCW's Randall Library. They're answering your questions on this Wednesday. You can call us at 910-343-1138. Or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Tell us about your own library habits or lack thereof. And it is the last segment, so just a few minutes left to get your question or comment in. And I do wonder if it's notable that we're getting many more emails from library users than phone calls. Just a thought. Before we get to Peggy, is there a difference, going back to Yale University's student campaign to save the books, and Lucy Holman, when you think about doing away with part of the collection, at least the physical collection, and I know you're not throwing away the books, but is there any difference between holding a physical book in your hand, reading that, and reading something online?
Oh, absolutely. We were actually discussing this prior to the show. I think studies have shown that with a print book and reading even a book online versus, just social media, there's this concept of deep reading that is much more conducive with the physical book. You're less distracted if you're reading on your phone or a tablet. An email can pop up or a text can pop up, and it's a much more distracted and disjointed experience than if you can really immerse yourself in a print book. So yes, I do think there's a difference, but then there's also the constraints we were talking earlier about traveling, and it may be difficult to take a pile of books with you on the road. So there are advantages and disadvantages. I personally listen to a lot of audiobooks while I'm gardening or cleaning the house or doing things around the house, because I can, you know, do two things at once. So I think there are advantages and disadvantages to all the formats.
There are different experiences. I do think that hand-eye coordination, and there is the literature to support it, that you retain information differently when it's physical. There's a convenience factor that allows for that electronic. Books are expensive to produce. Sometimes the typography on it is not great. You know, the print, they don't waste a lot of white space on a page, which really enhances the reading experience but increases the cost of the publication. So, you know, electronically you can enlarge the type font and those kinds of conveniences. So it goes both ways. I like to look at them as people who are bilingual. They can do both and speak both languages perfectly. But I think initially, when e-books were all the rage, you know, there was a real spike in the charts. But I think it's really leveled off in terms of a percent of readers that prefer that as their first choice. There's the convenience factor and the ease to get it and the ability. We have all of the accesses. You don't have to pay a penny for e-books. You may have to wait a minute. But public library, with your public library card, you get access to, we got a consortium collection called NC Live, NC Digital. NC Live is another resource that has it. NC Kids, and we have Access 360. These are all accesses to brand new publications in print. You may have to wait a little bit longer, but your library card gets it to you. But people
wait a little bit longer for the digital version?
Because it's single source. Just because it's out there in the cloud doesn't mean the publisher is going to let simultaneous use of the material. So if we want five people reading it at the same time, we got to pay for five copies. Even though it's not a physical item, they treat it that way because they make money.
And so then having physical copies and digital copies, what has that done to your budget?
Oh, it puts a real strain on the budget. In fact, we have to buy, if a new book comes out, there's, for a public library experience, there's just at the very, very beginning, there's three basic formats you have to get. You've got to get it in hardback. You got to get an audio version of it, because people want to listen to it. And then you got to get a digital version. So instead of buying one copy of the book, you've got three copies of that book. Now, if it's a bestseller and you bought 10 copies of that bestseller before, now think about it. It's the same exponential growth in use. So the demand on our budget is really tremendous when it comes to that. And then we try to get a wide assortment so that once you get past the bestseller list, there's still something to read. So yeah, it does put a real strain on book budgets, and that's a problem.
Peggy writes, libraries will always be able to offer what digital technology never will, the power of the direct human experience. A library, she writes, is the best kind of community asset. Yes, those who are homeless can find a place for some respite. Someone who doesn't have a computer or struggles with them can get help in applying for employment. Kids and their parents can enjoy story time or look up subjects. Community groups can use the library to hold meetings or offer the public films. She loves the library. And she says, as an avid constant reader, I love coming into my branch, looking at the new arrivals, as I always find books I've either read about and were interested in, or better yet, find ones I probably would never have heard of. As you're browsing online, usually results in a narrower search, as you tend to always look for books or subjects you're already interested in. In fact, she writes, I'm excited about the new library in Pine Valley because I will be able to ride my bike there on the new bike path. In my opinion, if someone thinks libraries are becoming obsolete, then our idea of civilization is diminishing. So, Harry, this branch is connected to the Cross
City. It's on the Cross City Trail. We've actually contacted the city about putting an off-ramp, if you will, off the Cross City Trail to directly connect it to the library, because the trail's across the street, so they're looking at that expansion. But we actually are looking at how we can develop a little bit of the outdoor space to be a rest stop on the Cross City Trail. So we're expecting people to bike to the library, because the ability to do that is really it's well designed to do that. It was created in our initial visioning of the building. We looked at where it was in position to the Cross City Trail and its access to other ways of getting there. I've heard from a number of people who live in the general neighborhood, and they can't wait till it opens because they want to ride their bike over to the library.
I'm one of those people. Okay.
Susan writes, as a senior citizen, I recently just resumed regular trips to the library to check out books I can't afford to buy. I also felt it was time to support the system in New Hanover County, since online book sales give the impression that libraries are no longer needed. I host a music and movement program with children once a week, and every parent raves about story time at libraries around town. She writes, I'm always calm and happy when visiting my Carolina Beach library. There are always people in the library, no matter what time I visit. I'm consistently impressed by the variety of events and services offered. A world without libraries would be a very sad place indeed. And we have an email from Robert who asks, is Ms. Holman related to the Mr. Holman who ran the bookstore in Belk downtown?
I am indeed. He was my father. Yes.
Really? Tell us about him.
Well, it started in the original Belk Berry building that is now the New Hanover County Library downtown.
You just said Belk Berry, so yes. It's not Belk Berry, Berry. No, you're probably right. You have more history here.
It is spelled Berry, but we pronounced it Berry. And he actually worked for Doubleday, and Doubleday rented the space within Belk Berry to have a bookstore. So he ran that. I'm sad to say I can't remember how many years, but it was several decades that he managed that. And then when they moved to the mall, Doubleday moved out and Belk's had its own book department there.
So do you have a feeling about the building downtown and Project Grace?
I would agree with Harry. Having the library there is critical, whether it's in the existing space or a new space. It's more of the content inside the box than the box itself.
So understanding that you're not advocating as university librarian at UNCW, is there any teeny weeny little personal feeling about the building?
You know, most of my memories of the building are as the department store. I moved away from Wilmington. I've been away for 30-odd years, so I have less connection with that building as a library than as the department store. So I do have fond memories, but would defer to the powers that be for the decision-making.
Well done. Adam writes, as an avid reader and supporter in full of the wonderful New Hanover County Library, I much prefer a hardback or paperback novel than reading on my iPad. Sure, there are perks to online reading, particularly when traveling, but for just got home, time to unwind reading, nothing beats real paper. The feel, the sound, even the smell of ink on paper evokes an authentic reading experience. Let's hope we always have such nice facilities available to the public. Thanks for putting the spotlight on our public libraries and their staff, who are simply the best resources of all. There was a piece published in Bustle online about someone who had a job in a public library, and she was talking about needing to be trained in suicide prevention, taking all kinds of phone calls just across the spectrum of human needs. Harry Tuckmeyer, do you have to train staff to deal with everything?
We do. We have the most amazing staff that you can imagine. We have 45 full-time employees who are just amazing. And they have been trained in crisis prevention, people who we experience suicide attempts. We've experienced overdoses. We've experienced people going into diabetic comas, you name it. It's a public building, and we get public experience. And it's not just the homeless. This is it's a community-wide problem.
Why do you think that members of the public reach out to the library for things?
Libraries are traditionally safe places. We're not judgmental. I think both Lucy and I have tried to make it clear that we're a welcoming and inviting place. It's fundamental. I think there's safety in information, and people feel comfortable. And for the most part, everyone, homeless or whatever, are well-behaved. They respect the institution and what's going on there, and do feel safe. I've worked in a library for a long time, and the personal interactions you get and the kinds of questions people will ask you at the reference desk, you think you're a small medical clinic, a legal office, a pharmacy, you name it, and stuff that oftentimes you don't want to know about, and you try to help them the best way you can.
And as you say, these are public buildings. In American Libraries magazine, one man writes about the murder of his wife last December, when in Sacramento she was working at the library and she was fatally shot multiple times in the head while sitting in her car getting ready to drive home. Her alleged killer, a man that she had banned from the library 2 months earlier for behaving aggressively towards staff and customers. And of course, in light of the shooting that just happened at UNC Charlotte, mm-hmm. there has to be crisis training, of course, for staff. How do you approach that? Lucy,
well, certainly at the university, and this happens across the university, we have had that same active shooter training that fortunately the staff at UNC Charlotte had undergone. As a matter of fact, we had a meeting this morning to do a second training. We had a training just about a year ago, and we're planning a revision of that or a second booster shot, if you will.
And did the UNC Charlotte shooting have anything to do with that?
Yes. This was, everyone in the university plans these regularly, but it just brought it again closer to mind that we should plan it in preparation for the next academic year. We also, sort of following what Harry said, we undergo training. We work with the university's counseling center and other student affairs units to do not so much crisis counseling, because we can certainly refer, but just sort of how to be that welcoming, supportive person who then gets the student to the appropriate resources on campus. So we just had that training 2 or 3 weeks ago, again, with those individuals. So we're constantly offering training to our staff.
Harry,
it's a regular experience. I mean, Wilmington being an epicenter for hurricanes, all of our staff worked the last hurricane. I've worked I can't tell you how many hurricanes I've worked over the years I've lived in Wilmington. So all of our staff are not only trained, we go to workshops by Trillium in terms of people with dependency issues, but we've got emergency management training, hurricane preparedness training. We serve in a lot of capacities. God forbid if there's another disaster. All of our county staff was working during the hurricane. So the library was closed, but the staff was working, answering phone calls with citizens who were looking for information, how to get out of town, was there a shelter available for them, what do they need to do in the event of this or that. It's just a variety of work. It's hard.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Harry Tuckmeyer, Lucy Holman, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coastline's producer is Rachel Keith. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.